Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 51. If you need to contact me, just send me an email at david@linuxcrazy.com. If you have any suggestions for a podcast, please email me. Also, you can find me on Freenode at IRC. The channel is #LinuxCrazy. In this podcast, I've got a couple of community messages. And then we have an interview with Daniel. He's a 7-year-old Linux user, and he reviews some games with his father, Weirded Out. Also, I'm playing around with a little project, the Gentoo Community Portal, and I'll have links to that on linuxcrazy.com. I'll talk about that a little bit. And also, I have an overview of my home network. I'll talk about that a little bit. What I'm going to change the format a little bit when I do these podcasts about stuff like this home network. Instead of doing them in a screencast format, what I'll do is I'll do an additional screencast, and I'll put a link to that on the homepage at linuxcrazy.com. The reason being is a lot of people like to listen to the podcast, but they don't necessarily want to download a whole video file. So what I'll do is any of these podcasts that maybe need an additional explanation, I'll go ahead and create a screencast of them. I've had a problem with some of my screencasts that when I was working in the terminal would become corrupted during the playback of the screencast. And I've tracked it down, and the reason is from using transparent terminals. So it seems like when I use a terminal that's not transparent or doesn't have some transparency to it, that problem seems to go away. Now, in this screencast I just completed, that will be on linuxcrazy.com along with this regular podcast, it is corrupted. One little segment, probably only like about 5 seconds long, is corrupted, and you can kind of see what I'm talking about. I didn't go ahead and redo it because it takes, you know, a lot of work, so I just went ahead and uploaded it. But for the future ones, I did a test recording, and on the future ones that seemed to go right away, so we should be okay now.
G'day listeners, this is Noel, otherwise known on many Freenode IRC channels as Weirded Out. Thank you for allowing me a moment of your time to make a request that will benefit many migrants who have called my neighbourhood home. I live in the western suburbs of Melbourne, Australia, where in recent times our government have settled thousands of immigrants from the Sudan, Liberia, and other African nations where English is neither spoken or is only spoken as a second language. The non-profit organisation which I represent, known as the St. Albans Community Support and Assistance Program, in conjunction with Grow Church, are combining resources to facilitate an ongoing computer-based training course which will help these people communicate confidently and effectively with all Australians. The software which will be used is specifically designed to help non-English speakers be able to pronounce words and phrase sentences in the unique way that Australians commonly do. Our goal is to accelerate the integration of Africans into our community and hopefully see them get jobs which would otherwise be very difficult. For more information regarding the software, please point your browser to www.hear-say.info, and shortly, information about the course and its benefits to the community will also be found at the Grow Church website, www.growchurch.com.au. This is where I can see you guys possibly help to make this a reality. We have the software, we have the facility and the networking infrastructure. What we need are laptops. If you are a resident of Australia and have a laptop gathering dust and would like to see it put to good use, then I would ask you to consider donating it to this worthy cause. The minimum configuration I am looking for is at least a 1 GHz x86 compatible processor, 256 MB of RAM, at least a 20 GB hard drive, and at least one working USB port, and ideally an internal wireless 54G network adapter. We need at least 10 laptops to run the course. I'm happy to organise pickup of laptops within Melbourne and surrounding suburbs. or pay for postage for delivery from anywhere within Australia. For more information, or if you are willing to donate, please email me at noel.saliba, that's S-A-L-I-B for Bob A, at gmail.com, or seek me out on the Freenode IRC server at #LinuxCrazy. Thank you for your time. Now back to the podcast.
The Southeast Linux Fest is a community event for anyone who wants to learn more about Linux and free and open source software. It is part educational conference and part social gathering. Like Linux itself, it is shared with the attendees of all skill levels to communicate tips and ideas and to benefit all who use Linux and free and open source software. The Linux Fest is a place to learn, to make new friends, to network with new business partners, and most importantly, to have fun. Come join us for the first annual Southeast Linux Fest on June 13, 2009 in Clemson, South Carolina. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.
G'day David, g'day Linux Crazy listeners. This is Weirded Out, and today I've got a very special treat for you. I have my son with me, Daniel. Now Daniel is 7 years old, and he is one of four children in my family. He is the second oldest, in fact he's one of twins, and today I thought I'd bring him on to the pod, to this tip session, so that I can just give him a little mini interview about some of the things he likes about his computer. So I'll introduce you to Daniel. Say g'day, Daniel.
G'day. Hello.
Now, Daniel, we're going to talk about your computer today. So,
yes.
What operating system do you have on your computer?
Gentoo Linux.
Gentoo Linux, yes. So it looks like I have a convert here. Okay, tell me, what sort of things do you like to do on your computer?
Sort of like playing games and stuff like that.
Okay, so playing games and stuff like that. So I will just pretty much say playing games. Okay, well, on the subject of games, what is your favourite game on your computer? And just tell us a little bit about it.
Boz Wars, and because we can build, you know, the defence instructors, you're allowed to, well, if your units are out of your base, you can just bring them in so that you can build a trap, and then they won't get attacked anymore.
So Boz Wars, probably some of you have heard of that particular game. It's a real-time strategy game, similar vein to something like Command and Conquer. And it is completely GPL'd and available through the Gentoo Portage tree, the main tree. So it is a really challenging game. I've had a go at it myself from time to time. And quite often when I go upstairs, I find at least two of my children playing that game at any one time. So, and they've been playing that game for quite a while. So it obviously they find it somewhat challenging and fun, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, so, okay, that's great to hear. What other games do you like to play on the computer?
Well, there is Wildlands, there's Battlefield, which is sort of like AZ Flag, but not
single player.
Multiplayer.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of jet which AZ Flag doesn't have, and it has no flags and there's no walls.
Yep.
So you can just go out of here. Place and start hunting, and there's tanks that are all blue, but one tank has blue wheels and a blue body, but a yellow gun, and
yep.
The rocket tank is yellow.
Okay, so yeah, go on.
And there's even red on the rocket tank.
Ah, very good, very good. Okay, so we'll just quickly just repeat some of those. The first one he mentioned was Widelands, which is...
Quickly,
just repeat some of those. The first one he mentioned was Widelands, which is another type of real-time strategy game, but it's similar to an older DOS and Windows game called Pioneers, if anyone's familiar with that. And that, again, is GPL'd and available through Portage. You mentioned Battle Tanks. Is that right, Battle Tanks, Daniel?
Well, yes, but...
Yeah.
But I don't like it when it's multiplayer because you can't move a bit.
Yep.
If it's multiplayer, that's how it is. It's multiplayer, so that's what makes me play it anymore.
Okay, so Battle Tanks. Oh, that's right. That's a different game again, isn't it? Battle Tanks, I remember now. Yeah. That's another GPL game available through Portage. There's another game he mentioned, I think it was Battle Zone. That was the one I was trying to refer to. That one's actually played, that's actually an old Atari game, and you can play it through an Atari 2600 emulator in Gen 2. The emulator we use and seems to work really well is called Stellar, and that's again available through Portage. And there's another game he did mention briefly, which is BZ Flag, or BZ Flag, and that's a game that... In fact, our whole family gets into from time to time, including my wife, surprisingly enough. And that's a multiplayer battle tank game. It's similar to like a first-person shooter, but because it's sort of very animated and it's just tanks, it's not too gruesome for children to sort of play. And we have a lot of fun. We team up against each other. There's Capture the Flag, and it's a really good option if you've got children and you'd like to play something that's somewhat like a first-person shooter without freaking them out too much. So, yeah, thank you very much, Daniel, for this interview. I think it's gone really well. What do you reckon?
Yes.
Well, thanks for your time, David. And from Daniel and I, we'll see you later. Bye-bye.
All right, this first thing I'm going to talk about a little bit is the Gen 2 Community Portal. When I did an interview with Dylan, he was talking about it would be beneficial to have a Gen 2 community portal where users could get together, compare configuration files, ask for help, just a place to kind of gather and get to know other people that have the same hardware as you, just look at their configuration files, stuff like that. It's just something to play around with. So I have a little project here that I'm working on. May not go anywhere, it may go somewhere, but anyhow, it's a lot of fun. It kind of gets me some practice because I've been fooling around with Python, so it gets me to actually write a program that works and that I can learn Python with. So I'll put a link up here to the project page, and if anyone has any suggestions or they want to help out or play around with it, they're welcome to it. The goal, I guess, eventually would be nice, would be to have a website to where you would have a web app that would automatically gather your system information, or you could upload your system information to the website and would have a good search function, and you could search for other users that had the same type hardware as you. You could look at other people's XOR config files, stuff like that. I wrote a little Python program that generates a report, and then it uploads it to a website. So it would be something in the future that would be pretty neat if you had a website that would pretty much do all this stuff for you. You could generate the report with some type of program, and then go to the website and click upload it, and then do a search on the website. But that would be more involved. But basically, here's kind of the information that's going to be in the report: your host name, your uname A, which is your kernel and all that, your CPU information. For Gen 2, it would be Emerge Info. Now, this you could make a program for apt or anything else that you wanted to. Emerge Info for Gen 2, list LSPCI, LSUSB, your XOR config. For Gen 2, RC Update Show, which is... RC update is all your programs that start at boot time. rcconfig, that's kind of an important file now with OpenRC. Your system map, what version if you're using GNOME, what version if you're using KDE, and uptime, how much uptime your computer has. And here's some more fun stuff. Find someone with your hardware, connect with other users in your area, search for systems like your own, compare config files, ask for help. You can you could have other community members amend your file if you're having problems with your file, and update it, and you could try it out. Auto backup of all your configuration files automatically. You could have it could be linked to the portal and your configuration files. Once you hit a little button, you could update your configuration files so you'd have a backup of them. Just stuff like that. So that might be pretty much fun to fool around with. I'll later on, once I got something to present, what I have now, it actually works, but it's not very slick, and it's not like, it doesn't have a slick web page for it and all that. So maybe in the future, we'll see how it goes. The other thing I was going to do in this podcast is I kind of talk about my little home network. I had one of my listeners, his name is Alan. He wanted to set up his own little home network, and he was asking that how I did mine. So I thought I would kind of walk through how I did my little home network here. And like I said, I do have a screencast of it, and the screencast will be linked at the front page of linuxcrazy.com. So you can download the screencast if you want to get a little bit more involved and kind of see all the settings and everything. But what I'll do is I'll basically right now, I'll just give a general overview of it. And it all starts here for me with my modem, which is I use an ADSL modem. I'm here in South Florida in the United States, and it's a DSL line. Now there is Comcast, which has cable, and even AT&T has this new, it's actually fiber optic. But with all the stuff that I have going on here behind, you'll see once all the stuff I have going on behind this modem, a lot of those options don't really work that well because they kind of lock the modem, or however they use to connect up. And this works really well. The speed is not the greatest, but it's fast enough for me. I think it's 6 down, and it's not a lot up. Like, it's only like 256 up. So, but it works okay. And you know how internet is. If you're addicted to the internet like I am, you don't want to mess it up. So if it's working, it's almost like, why fool with it? Now, when AT&T came out with this fiber optic, the price for the DSL dropped, fortunately. So it's really kind of cost effective. So the price dropped about, it used to be $49 a month, and it went down to $29 a month for the fastest DSL that AT&T has. So I think we'll just stay with that while it's working. So from the modem, it connects to the wide area network naturally. And going out, I have a static IP address. I get one static IP address. So when it goes to the modem, now I pass that static IP address. I pass that to my Linksky WRT54GL, which is a Linksky router that runs Linux on it. And Newegg has them. I'm not exactly sure how much they are. They're not really expensive, maybe around $50. And as soon as I got it, I put DDWRT version 23SP2 on it. Now, when you put this firmware on it, you put a minimal firmware first, and then you put this version 23SP2 on it. And it kind of scared me because when I first did it, when I rebooted the modem, it just sat there. So once I did a hard reset and then it rebooted it again, it came up and it's been working flawlessly ever since. It uses IP tables for the firewall, and it has all the settings that I need. The only settings that's not on it that I wish that it had on it was a way to blacklist individual IP addresses. Now, I'm sure there's a way to code that in, but I'm, again, back to my, if it ain't broke, don't fool with it. So I'll use, I got other ways of banning IP addresses. I put them in my host file, is actually what I do. So here at this router, and now it connects to the modem using DHCP. The reason I do that is I tried giving it a static address to the modem, and it would connect and get to the internet, but the modem and this router weren't really communicating that good, because I need really good communication for the static address to go right straight to the Linksky router. So now it does. The router, the Linksky router, has the static IP address. Also, like I said, I go from the modem to the router with, I use IP pass-through. I tried bridging a straight bridge between them, and the problem with that was, it works, but the problem with that is then I use the Linksky router to connect straight to the AT&T and bypassing this modem. And the problem I had was, even when I changed the MAC address on the Linksky router, I couldn't tell sometimes when I had problem exactly what was going on, because AT&T has their own, you know, software inside this modem that helps you troubleshoot. So when I went to just to the straight IP pass-through, that way I could go to the modem and look and see what was going on. Its actual address is 192.168.1.254. So I can put that in a browser, and I can go visit the modem and see exactly what's going on, if there's a problem with AT&T, or maybe if it's a problem within my own home network. So that the IP pass-through gives the Linksky router the static address. And then from there, this Linksky router also has a wireless access point. So that's all taken care of. The wireless access point, it's set up with DHCP. So any laptops or anything that I want to connect, my phone, cell phone, anything that I want to connect to get out to the internet through an access point, it's using DHCP. I get right out. The address for the Linksky router is 192.168.0.1. So this is actually the default gateway. This router is the default gateway to the internet, because it's a straight shot right out. So from there, I've got two 8-port switches. Okay, and from those 8-port switches, I've got one 8-port switch that goes to 3 boxes, and another 8-port switch that goes to 3 boxes. So the first 8-port switch goes to my Asterisk server. The IP address there is 192.168.0.3. Now I have ports forwarded to this box for the Asterisk server. I have a range of ports open, 1000 to 2000 UDP. That's for the voice. And also I have single ports open, 5004, that's SIP, 5060, that's SIP, and 4569, that's IAX2. That's another protocol. The IAX2 is the native Asterisk protocol. The next box is my wet little web server here at dwabbott.com. It's exposed to the web. You can visit that and check it out. Its local IP address is 192.168.0.2. And again, port forwarded. I've got port forwarded port 80, naturally, for a web server, and 443 for SHTTP. And the next box is my little SSH FTP server, and its IP address is 192.168.0.4. I've got port forward to it. I've got a unusual SSH port forwarded to it, and also I have FTP forwarded to it, port 21. Now that I don't leave the FTP open all the time, if I need to do some downloading or something like that from the wide area network, I'll go ahead and open up port 21. I don't like to keep it open all the time, just for security reasons, if I'm not going to be using it. But I use that box a lot here on my little home network, like if I need to transfer files from one computer to the other. I just FTP the file up to the little FTP server, and then I can pull it from another computer instead of having to transfer it to a CD or a USB stick or something like that. The other A-port switch has this box that I'm actually on right now, this little workstation. Its IP address is 192.168.0.5, and it's an Oppertin processor, an Italian motherboard. It's almost like a server, but beefed up. I got a good ATI video card in it, and it's pretty much rock solid. I bought the parts, basically all the internal parts except for the motherboard, off of eBay pretty cheap, so I just made sure I had a good motherboard and real good. I bought the hard drives off of Newegg also, and real good hard drives, but a lot of the other stuff I'll pick up used. The other box is my little backup box. I call it my podcast backup box. It's IP address 192.168.0.6. And it's basically just the same as this box here, except for it's just a backup. Just in case something happens, you never know, that I'll have a box to play around with. And the other thing I have on the network is a print server. And the print server is actually a D-Link DP-301P+, and the printer is a LaserJet. It's an old LaserJet 4L, and it works like a champ. It uses a toner. It's a LaserJet, so it just uses a LaserJet cartridge, and it lasts forever. I mean, I do a lot of printing with it, and it lasts forever, so it's pretty cost effective. And that is at, like I said, that's at 192.168.0.7. So that's pretty much the home network. Like I said, I created a screencast of this. If you wanted to check out the screencast, it'll be there at linuxcrazy.com. And also, I've got a bunch of pictures of all this, and I'll link that up there at the website also. So thanks a lot for listening to the podcast, and I'll see you in a couple weeks. Bye-bye.